you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hello and welcome to Boarding Party. On this podcast, if you don't already know, you're about to, we talk to some of today's funniest comedians about their secret geek obsessions. And a lot of times we're finding it's not a secret at all. And there's no reason for it to be a secret, but we're billing it as a secret. Because secrets are sexy. Secrets sell. Secrets get clicks. They get downloads. So for our purposes, everyone's obsession is a secret and it's filthy. So this week, sharing her filthy secret obsession with the squeaky clean, really, Harry Potter series franchise, I would say, is Karen Chee. Karen is a very funny comedian and a writer for Late Night with Seth Meyers. In fact, you've probably seen her on the show. She's wonderful, and she has essentially a lifelong love of the Harry Potter books, movies, of Harry Potter quizzes, of butterbeer. And we're going to talk to her about all of that and more, plus what it's like to write at Late Night with Seth Meyers. Another thing to note that is fun for the next few episodes, we are going to do a whole bunch of conversations, not just with comedians who are also geeks, but specifically who are big geeks for Harry Potter, because his birthday is coming up and we wanted to celebrate the best way we know how by talking about him, by talking about how much we love Harry Potter, the books, the movies, fanfic, the fandom in general, how much we love the Wizarding World of Harry Potter in Orlando, all that stuff. So definitely check it out if you're a fan of Harry Potter. And if not, well, after these podcasts, you're going to be. Because why aren't you? What's going on there? It's really fun. It's for the whole family. If you missed it as a kid, that's okay. Get on board. Anyway, so that's what we're going to be talking about with some of your favorite comedians, their obsession with Harry Potter. But first, we're talking to Karen Chee, big old Harry Potter fan. Karen, first, thanks so much for doing this. I'm very excited that you're here.
Thank you for having me. I'm so stoked.
So we always start, I ask every guest the question, do you consider yourself a geek?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, I think I have a very like obsessive personality. Oh. So there are like large things in the world where I'm like, I don't know anything about this and I don't care. And then other things where I'm like, I have to know every single detail.
Is that that sort of completist? Is that it? Or it's more just like you just really engage with something once you like it?
Ooh, that's a good question. I think a mix of both probably.
Yeah.
Because if I start something and I don't like it, I'll stop. Like, I read a lot of books, but I'm very happy to stop reading a book if I think it's bad.
I remember the day I realized that was an option,
yes.
How liberating it was.
It's so great. My grandpa one time was just like, life is too short to read, like, a bad book. And I was like, Grandpa,
yeah.
That's smart.
After 50 pages, I think I got it.
Yeah.
I don't think this is going to get magically better.
100%. Yeah.
So, spoiler alert, we're mostly going to talk about Karen's love of Harry Potter.
Yes.
But is there anything, doesn't even have to be like geek or genre related, that typifies something that you've just had to completely learn about or obsess over?
Because it was also kind of bottomless, which was exciting but frustrating at the same time.
Sure.
I got very into like British satire and like sitcoms and stuff when I was in high school, but very specifically you can sort of trace like generations of different comedians, and so I remember watching panel shows and being like, oh my god, David Mitchell is so funny.
Exactly. Bread and milk is a bad idea. People do it, gives them diarrhea and they dry out.
Really feed bread and milk to any mammal, including humans.
But there is a Radio 4 show that
come off it.
Well, you shouldn't feed humans bread and milk.
No, not really.
What do you mean, not really? It's absolutely demonstrably fine.
No, it's not very good for you.
Well, it's fine. time.
Bread and butter
pudding. Drinking milk and eating bread for ages. Why is it suddenly a massive problem? Oh, yeah. No, actually, we're supposed to live till we're 250. But no, we've been eating all this poisonous bread and milk all the time. We barely lived past 98.
And then realizing he was in shows with Robert Webb. So I watched all of those and read about them and then realized they were inspired by, like, Fry and Laurie.
Well, bit of a surprise piece of news here. We don't normally do news stories, but this one does seem fairly major. It'd be silly to ignore it. According to a Reuters news flash, the British government has apparently just been bought by Honda.
Then I watched those and they were inspired by, like, Monty Python. So I watched those and they were inspired by, like, Peter Cook and Dudley Moore. And I just kept going further and further back. And now I have this insane, whoa, like, map in my head of, like, 20th century British satire.
I'm fascinated by all this, specifically that it was going on in high school.
Yeah. I was really cool. Yeah.
Of all the things that high schoolers could get really into, yes, I do think that that is a pretty cool one. There's some pretty... like, as an adult, I would call uncool, or things I would rather my teen not be obsessed with.
Ooh,
I think
fair.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Are you thinking about drugs?
I think I'm thinking about drugs.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If my teen came to me and said, should I be obsessed with drugs or should I be obsessed with British satire? I'd be like, let me ask your father. No, I would definitely say British satire. Wow. And you worked backward.
Yeah, because I found that, like, duo of people was just like, oh, like, how did you get here? And then I kept going backwards, and then I remember being excited and then also kind of frustrated when it branched out laterally, because I was like, oh, no, this tree just keeps getting bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It never ends.
Yeah, it never ends.
Eventually, you'll get into what... I almost just said, what was before TV?
I honestly did. I went far enough back to, like, Flanders and Swan, who are these duo that used to do concert halls and sing funny songs. And
yes,
I think they were just, like, the latest they got, I think, were just on the radio. And I would hear YouTube recordings of records that somebody had. And so it was just, like, the worst quality. And I was like, I must listen to all these.
Yeah. It's sort of an ancient podcast in
a
way.
Yes, truly. Wow.
To bring it full circle, radio is just ancient podcasting. Okay, so definitely a geek and definitely has, it seems like that is a hallmark of, well, certainly I think everyone who's been on this podcast, but a lot of people who consider themselves geeks, it's like, yeah, I don't know everything, but man, the stuff that I do know, I've gone deep.
Yes.
Before we dive into Harry Potter, I feel like I really struggled with what is, like, the first question you ask someone who's a Harry Potter fan, and I think it's got to be, what house are you?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm a Ravenclaw.
Whoa, Ravenclaw. Yeah. Rare. Well,
yeah.
Yeah.
I think Gryffindor is obviously super popular, and then I think New York has lots of Slytherins.
Yeah.
So I wonder if that's just how it breaks down. Yeah.
Yeah. New York, and I'll go out on a limb and say specifically the entertainment industry. And remember, Slytherins are not evil.
Right.
Remember this.
Not
but
all.
Lots of Slytherins. Not all. Yeah. But I think lots of Slytherins.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, is that a conclusion you arrived at on your own, or did you take the Pottermore quiz?
I both. So I arrived to it on my own, and then I took the Pottermore quiz. Just my level of nerdiness is going to be very embarrassing, but I also took... Okay, so Time Magazine did this quiz that was created by a whole bunch of, like, scientists who were studying personalities and stuff, and
whoa,
they did an entire breakdown, and then also gave you a percentage breakdown afterwards of how much of each house you were, because they were saying everyone's, like, a mix of them. I took it and was like, great, I'm a Ravenclaw on all three fronts. And then I sent the quiz to all of my friends being like, you must take this. I need to know what your percentage breakdowns are.
Did they?
Yeah, they did. And I had them screenshot and send it back. And I was like, this is very cool.
Okay, was it accurate though? Were you like, oh, what? You are not a Hufflepuff.
No, I think it weirdly was very accurate because there are other quizzes that exist in the world where it's really obvious which answer correlates which house. It'll be like,
oh, yeah, like every quiz in 17 magazine. Does he like you? And you just pick all the ones that are like, well, he calls me back all the time, even though you've, like, never spoken on the phone at the end. You're like, he loves me.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think people do that, and then it helps pick, you know, whatever answer they actually want. So it'll be like, when I wake up in the morning, I feel brave and courageous. Like, nobody ever feels that way.
No.
But this one, I think, was trickier from what I remember. And so I think people answered honestly. And then it would give you. Yeah.
I remember taking the Pottermore quiz.
Wait, yes, what house are you? Okay. I can't believe I didn't ask.
Well, so, I'll, okay, I'm a Hufflepuff.
I know. Hufflepuff!
Okay. I'm a proud Hufflepuff.
No, that's the best.
I've always identified... Thank you for saying that.
Yeah.
I've always identified as Hufflepuff. When I have told many people in my life that I am a Hufflepuff, their reaction is that it's completely incorrect, that it's wrong, it couldn't possibly be. Mm-hmm. And it does make me wonder, am I? And I don't know. But I've taken it, it's like, I do think, in hindsight, I answered a lot of questions about like loving animals and nature.
Yeah.
I wouldn't consider those my defining day-to-day characteristics, but I do think that's what got me sorted into Hufflepuff.
Yes.
So,
wait,
yes.
Why do you think you're not a Hufflepuff?
Because I think I have other, like, more dominant characteristics that are probably somewhere between Ravenclaw and Gryffindor.
Ooh, interesting. Yeah.
But not according to Pottermore. And that, to me, it's gospel. Fine.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
Because I really like talking about this to figure, especially if I'm meeting like a new group of friends who are like about our age. I feel like everyone knows the references of Harry Potter and stuff. And then it's a good way to sort of get people talking about themselves.
Sure.
But I will say a very fun thing I've noticed is people either pick a house based on what they how they think they come across or what they value.
Mm.
And that's always interesting because I think I can see you being a Hufflepuff because I can see you valuing like kindness and like consistency and like being a good person over the other houses. But I can also see you being like, wait, hold on. I'm also like charismatic. And that's not necessarily what you think of.
Yeah. I'm also not boring. No. I love Hufflepuff. And I agree. I think it's like the things, what are you versus what do you value?
Yes.
And if it's what do I value? 1,000%
Yeah.
Hufflepuff.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to trade it in. I love Hufflepuff. Okay. Well, now that we have that sorted, thank you. That was the worst thing I've ever done.
No, it was beautiful. I'm glad we had a moment of silence after for it.
I really apologize. What was your first encounter with Harry Potter?
I remember, so I have an older brother who is 6 years older than me, and so when I was a kid, I was, like, obsessed with him and did everything he did and thought he was the coolest person in the world. I, like, still do. When I was in kindergarten or first grade, he was solidly, like, obsessed. And, like, in middle school and, like, able to read on his own, you know, and would be reading these, like, thick books, and I was just like, what is this? And I recall him reading the books out loud to me before I was old enough to, like, actually read the full books on my own. And I think it's
so
like maybe
nice.
Yeah, he's so nice. And I remember we didn't know how to pronounce a lot of the words, like Hermione, I think he always mispronounced until the movies came out. Just because we had never met a Hermione before.
I think very few people have.
Yes.
That's a tough one.
Yeah. And then we always thought it was Sirius Black, not Sirius Black. Because we were just like, there's no way someone's name is Sirius. That's like too stupid.
Yeah, it can't. Yeah. Surely it's Cyrus. It's not the Sirius XM thing.
No, like, that would be crazy. And then it was. But yeah.
So it was the books. That was your first. And now, were you reading, well, you and your brother, reading the books, was this before there were any films? Were there films that were coming out, but you guys were focused on the books? Like, how did that fall?
I should have double checked this. I'm 90% sure that we read the books when I was in, starting when I was in maybe first grade together. And then I think when I was in third grade, the first movie came out. Because I remember going to the theater and watching it with my parent, like our whole family went together. And my brother was so excited and also demanded that he was seated alone. So he sat maybe with a friend, actually. I think, but he sat slightly separately from the rest of us. And I sat with my parents, and the first movie is like very scary for young children. And I remember my mom being like, you can open your eyes now. And like sort of helping me watch this movie that I wanted to so badly enjoy.
Yeah. So, okay. Yeah. You were in third grade. He's 6 years older. So he was in
a freshman in high school who had to go to a movie with his parents and younger sister.
Yeah. He was like, this is fine, but I will be sitting in a different row.
Yeah.
Sure. That's right around the age that it kicks in. Okay. So did you have the feeling of like, oh, this thing that I've loved is now coming to life in front of me? Or was it just like, oh yeah, it's like a movie?
I actually don't remember, but the one part I do remember is I was like, oh my God, other people know about this?
Because
I think it was because I had an older brother that none of my friends who were my age in elementary school, especially in the early elementary school years, knew what Harry Potter was. And so it was just like a cool thing we did at home. And then when it was a movie, I was just like, oh my gosh, the whole world knows this story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when you first were reading the books, it sounds like you loved it, partially because you loved it, but partially because you're a brother.
Yeah,
but
I think so.
Did you fall in right away or did it take some time?
I think I fell in right away. Okay. I, especially when I was younger, had an insane sort of imaginative life that I would often, it would just sort of be my world. Mm-hmm. And then I'd be like, oh, wait, this isn't true, you know, sort of a thing. Mm-hmm. And I think Harry Potter, one of the coolest things about it is that it's so, it's written kind of like a puzzle piece in a way that just fits right in with the way we currently view the world. And you're like, oh, I mean, obviously none of this is true, but it could be.
Yeah.
And she like allows for like people like us who don't know about it. It's just this, I sound insane, but it's like.
Not at all.
When I was a child, I was like, oh, because my barrier, whatever that is, of suspension of disbelief mm-hmm. was so much lower. I was immediately like, yes, I believe in this.
Yeah.
When I turn 11, I will go to Hogwarts.
They might contact me. Yeah. No, I think that's. I may get this wrong, but I think that that is a specific genre of fantasy called, I believe it's called like portal fantasy.
Ooh.
Yeah. Which is the idea, like there are some, like Game of Thrones, where it's just a different world mm-hmm. or Middle Earth, Westeros. But then there are some where it's like, it's your world and there's some kind of gateway.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that is really intoxicating, especially for kids, because this sounds, but like you sort of do see the possibility for magic.
Yes.
In ways adults don't.
Oh my God. Yes, absolutely. It's so great.
I wish I'd had the experience of reading it as a kid and thinking like, oh, maybe I'll get my Hogwarts
letter. Yes, truly. It was like, I would feel like drunk with power thinking of what I would do when I got to Hogwarts.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So that's a great question. So what would you have done at drunk with power between ages... what, 6 and however old you were when it finished?
Yeah, yeah.
Was there like a recurring fantasy of...
of like what I would do?
Yeah.
I think I would have been a very good student. Mm-hmm. I would have been very scared of the defense of the dark arts classes. I would have mm-hmm. been like horrified by. Mm-hmm. If any of the things that happened in Harry Potter, like the scary things happened while I was at Hogwarts, I would have not ever stepped up to the plate. I was solidly not a Gryffindor. I'm like... If put to the test, I'm sure I would do the right thing. But if someone was like, who wants to volunteer to fight a dragon? I'd be like, oh, no, not me. Yeah. I would have had so much fun hanging out in the library. I would have gone to all the Quidditch games. Mm-hmm. I would think that I could be on the Quidditch team until I remember that I'm like afraid of heights. And then I would be like, no, no, no. Mm-hmm. yeah.
All, I mean, look, that sounds like the average Hogwarts student experience. Yeah, it's like, I just want to get in and get out. I want to have fun, like see some Quidditch, but I'm not trying to Cedric Diggory myself here. Like,
No, I don't want to
live.
Die.
No.
Yeah, that's crazy.
No. So what is the deepest that you've ever gone? We've already talked about the quizzes and the forced quizzing.
Oh
of
my
friends.
God. I do think the forced quizzing was pretty awful because I want to say I did that up until last year. and then, yeah, okay. I mean, I will say, especially in high school and college, anytime I had a vacation and I could just let my brain not think about school or whatever, I would just reread the books, like in order of how much I liked them, and which changes all the time. But,
oh, wow.
Yeah.
and it out was, of order.
Yeah, just because it felt... I would be in a certain mood for a certain book or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
And it was such a nice place in my brain. Maybe everyone feels this way. I just haven't talked about it with people before. But I feel like a lot of books and a lot of TV shows I rewatch, like I rewatch Downton Abbey very regularly and like The Parent Trap very regularly because they feel like places to me rather than
totally
a story. Yeah. And so Harry Potter, I'd always be like, oh, it feels like a safe place in my mind.
Yeah.
It's like just going home for a while and coming back. Yeah.
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 The order changes, but is there one book that sort of stands out for you as like, this is always my favorite?
The Prisoner of Azkaban is like my favorite.
You know, I think that stands out for a lot of people, both movie and book, as favorite.
I think the movie is it's so good.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it works really well because I bet if a lot of the movies, I think, out of order don't really make a lot of sense. Like, you would have to sort of know what happens before and after.
Yeah.
But I think that as a standalone book, honestly, works so well.
Yeah.
And the story is very neatly tied together. It has its like own fun thing with the time turners. Yeah, it's like very cool.
Yeah, I think a lot of books and movies try and are pretty unsuccessful with time jumping and time looping. Mm. And Prisoner of Azkaban does it really well in a way that makes sense.
Yes.
It's not super complicated. You know, she sets up very clear rules,
mm-hmm.
and they follow the rules, and it pays off really well.
How did you get there? I was talking to you there. No, you were there.
What's he talking about, Harry?
I know. Honestly, Ron, how can somebody be in two places at once?
In my all-time Harry Potter crushes, it, like, appears in that book, Remus Lupin.
What was that thing? Okay.
It was a Dementor, one of the guards of Azkaban. It's gone now. It was searching the train for Sirius Black. If you'll excuse me, I need to have a little word with the driver.
Very thrilling for me.
That is a fascinating angle. Yes. Okay.
Wait, do you have a Harry Potter crush? We should discuss.
Yeah, Sirius Black.
Oh, great. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Yeah.
He's just sort of like tortured, but he never lost his like moral compass, even though he's an Azkaban. Like,
He's kind of a bad boy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Remus Lupin, too, has the same.
I think I like him because he is like a gentle and possibly weak version of Sirius Black.
He's just,
And I think I generally am like, oh, if a man appears smart but weak, I'm like, yes, hello.
Smart.
Yeah, like kind, but also like physically not really imposing.
Yeah.
Or present. Yeah.
Okay, I thought you meant weak, sort of just like he's just generally like weak.
I can't imagine him really lifting a suitcase with much success.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There is something kind of, and maybe it's to contrast it probably is his like beast.
Yes.
Within.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah.
The description of I can't imagine him carrying a suitcase is very, could have been in the breakdown. Imagine.
He would be very smart, say the right things to the right people. You know what I mean? Like if someone evil appeared, I'm sure he would try to fight them.
Yeah, he'd probably be good at it.
Yeah, he'd probably be good at it if it's like spells. But if it was physical fighting, oh, he's dead.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's hot.
I think in a similar vein of Sirius Black is, and I also think it's only the way he was portrayed by Alan Rickman, is Snape. There is something a little obsessive, true, but sweet about the way Snape is portrayed in the movies.
Yes.
That I don't think is true in the books. I don't think Snape doesn't have the same sweetness that Alan Rickman and torturedness that he conveys. I think you're
absolutely right. I think in the books he comes across like slimier and pointier.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right? Like even physically and personality wise, but I think Alan Rickman was such a soft, kind person that even the mean things I was like, oh, he's secretly probably very warm.
He probably would make you a cup of tea if he came over and just like be nice to you.
Yeah.
So have you been to the Wizarding World?
Okay, yes. I went to the Wizarding World.
Yes.
I heard you were just there.
I was just
there. Oh my God,
there.
How was it?
I mean, it was so fun. We were there for, because we were covering the opening of Hagrid's Magical Creatures Motorbike Adventure, which I am very good at now saying. But yeah, it's always magical.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when have you been there?
When I was in college, my college improv group and I would over winter break for a week go to someone's house together. And one of our one of the people in the troupe had was from Florida, so we went to visit his house. And then one of the days we just drove to the Wizarding World, and it was amazing.
What are your thoughts on real life Butterbeer?
Okay, I will say I was a little disappointed that Butterbeer was clearly just a soda. when I say a little disappointed, I'll say like furious.
Yep.
Because I wanted it to be that like hot beverage that like was filled with liquor, you know?
Yes. Yeah, so when I ordered it, I did ask. I was like, and how much? Like, what's the alcohol content of this? And the woman's like, none. Like, this is a theme park for young children and families. Like, we're not serving booze all day.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, okay. And I do believe I asked another park attendant, is there another station. Like, yes. Is this it for the butterbeer, or yeah. can I get a boozy butterbeer? And they're like, no, stop.
Okay, I'm so sorry. I just remembered this is the absolute most embarrassing place possible. Please. Thing. Okay, so in college, my friend Cecilia and I took the science class together. Neither of us were into science. Actually, she kind of was. She's like very smart, but I think had to take this requirement. Mm-hmm. And it was for chemistry, I think, some sort of chemistry-related class. And so we took this class called The Science of Cooking, where we it was mostly cooking things, and then you'd have to learn about the science behind it, but it was very easy and basic, and mm-hmm. so all the, like, arts and English kids were doing it.
Sure.
And at the end of the course, you got to create, like, your own dish of some kind that incorporated something you had learned earlier in the semester. And she and I were like, okay, what do we do? What do we do? And both of us were like, let's just make this as easy but as fun as possible. Like, we found one of the things, like a formula that's like how to make things bubble, you know, whatever. And I was, we were truly just like, we have to make butterbeer. We have to make it better than actual Wizarding World butterbeer.
Better butterbeer.
Yes. So we literally made butterbeer for one of our final assignments for this class, and then had like a full, what is it called? Like a trifold?
Oh, yes. The yeah. science fair, like, I yes. know exactly what you mean.
Like
what is
board.
That? Yes.
I don't know what they're called. But
I don't either.
We had one that was like a Harry Potter themed, and we had butterbeer, and we like fermented it over weeks and like added in all this flavor and like made it really cool, and then also had the thing to make it foamy and stuff. It was so glorious.
Was it good?
I thought so.
Did you write down what?
I mean, I have it somewhere, like on my computer. I can email it to you.
Please. Oh my God. I'll give you full. I will now. I will. If anyone ever comes to my home and drinks it, I'll be like, it is not my recipe. That's pretty deep. Like making your own, crafting your own butterbeer recipe.
Yes. It was, I will say, less mortifying at the time because everyone was our age and everyone was like excited about it.
Sure.
Now saying it sort of, you know, looking back, being like, hello, I did this for a class project as a 22-year-old feels insane.
I think it's so wonderful. And I think anytime I think back to so many classes in college where it's like, if I had just chosen to have fun with this instead of really hating it, man, I would have done better in college.
Yeah, college.
Ugh. So you've been a fan since you were a kid.
Yes.
How do you feel, particularly since most of your life you've known the story of Harry Potter, when good old JK mm-hmm. adds or changes,
yeah.
For example, the most recent Dumbledore and Grindelwald.
Yes.
Her sort of dropping that, like, yes, their relationship, I think her words were like, had like a sexual element
sure,
to it.
Yeah.
I'm not sure she actually came out and said that they had had sex or in a relationship.
Right.
But when,
I mean, I got horned up.
You're like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So like when the canon is changing, when she's sort of changing it, it's fun and exciting that it's like dynamic as mm-hmm. opposed to like, oh my, I guess what I'm saying is I think so many times there's this reaction among fans of like my childhood,
right.
you know, but it's like, yeah.
Yeah. It honestly doesn't bother me that much, partly because I think I can understand from her perspective. I feel like one of the reasons why the books were so good is because she had such complete lives imagined for every single character. And so even if she didn't detail all of them in the book, I'm sure they existed in her brain, and that's why they felt three-dimensional.
Yeah.
And so I'm sure later on she's like, oh, wait, but here are all these other details that I thought of that are true for me that I... She's like, in her mind, she's like, I'm just wanting to share this with you, so I kind of get that.
Yeah.
And then on the other end of things, I am truly like, oh, but my childhood is over, so I don't... No, do you know what I mean? It, like, ended... When it end, it's not going back and affecting my childhood.
Yeah.
In any way, I still love what I loved, and if I want to disregard whatever sexual relationships happened, which I don't want to discard.
No.
Yeah.
No.
It doesn't really bother me at all. It is very funny to me how seriously people take these, or like how offended they get.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is a really good point of the argument. My childhood. It's like, well, your childhood has been over. For years.
If a new Harry Potter thing is ruining your life and you're like 28, there's like other problems in your life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like you can have an opinion, but you gotta keep it in a place.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Totally fair to have an opinion.
Gotta manage that.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I tend to agree. I think it's fun when an author or mm-hmm. someone expands the canon or what we thought was going on, especially when it feels correct. I don't know how else to say that. It can feel disingenuous or like something's being invented, mm-hmm. but when it feels like, oh, I always kind of thought, or like, interesting.
Oh, the one thing that I will say I did get pissed off about not for the reason that it's going to sound like, is when she went back and was like, why couldn't Hermione have been black? That thing, I was like, that felt like a cheap way to add diversity in hindsight after she forgot to include diversity the whole time.
Totally.
Just because I'm like, if Hermione were black and you had written everyone else to be white aside from like Cho Chang, her experience at Hogwarts, I'm sure, would have been very different than what it was. You know
very
what I mean?
Different. Yeah.
And like the fact of clearly imagining her to look at least something like Emma Watson and then giving her this like amazing thing and like all this stuff. And then after the books were done being like, hey, you're the one who's racist for thinking she can't be black. I'm like, no, you wrote a white book. That's fine. You wrote a white book. We all love it. It was so well written that it feels universal. That in itself, that's amazing. Just own that.
But don't turn around and tell me like, well, you imagined a white girl just because I wrote one?
Right. Like, also because she wrote the Asian character to be named Cho Chang. Like, clearly she's not, like, subtle about race. Yeah. I don't know.
Okay, so when we come back, we'll dive into a day in the life at Late Night with Seth Meyers. But first, we're going to take a quick break.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Karen, we're back, and I want to talk to you a little bit about what it's like working at Late Night with Seth Meyers. What is a typical day like at Late Night?
Okay, so in the morning, we all get in either 9:30 or a little bit before, and then depending on whether you're monologue or sketch or whichever one you're sort of picking for the day, I guess, monologue writers have deadlines throughout the day. There are two writer's assistants who are super awesome named Kyle and Aileen, and they write up a whole bunch of setups based on the news that are just like one-word quick summaries of a headline. And then based on that, we write punchlines. And so we write 3-4 pages of those until about 1:30, and then we send them into our head writer, Alex Bays, who then reads through and picks the ones he likes. And then at 2:00, we go in for a reading with Seth, who sort of speed reads through all the ones that Bays had picked and then highlights the ones he liked. So it really gets the final pool of jokes that go to rehearsal are super small. And then at rehearsal, which is at 4:15. We have another deadline before. So between that, we have a deadline, and then we go to rehearsal at 4:15 with a live audience, and we try out our jokes on them, and then we see what lands and what doesn't. And then at 5:30, we have the final deadline, and then 6:30 is a taping. There are like three, in my mind, three tracks of writing that happen throughout the day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, not, but in a way, we joked, but everyone is sorted. Your mono, sketch, or sort of like team closer look.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
I think you're right.
And you're mono.
I'm mono.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Is it fun, stressful, all of the above?
Yeah, it's mostly very fun. I think the only times it's stressful is if I'm having an off day in terms of being able to think of funny jokes, and then around 1:00, I'll be like, oh no, I don't have enough jokes. And then be like, rapid fire, like, just like write a bunch of stuff. And I feel like Bays can easily tell when he's like, last page is just, oh, Karen, no. yeah. But it's mostly very fun, and it's nice to have deadlines because when they're done, we like, because we're all in the same room, we just sort of hang out and goof off and do bits and stuff.
That's great.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds very fun. The more you talk about it, the more I'm like, this is comedy Hogwarts.
Yeah.
You're sorted and it's congenial, maybe some competition, but maybe mostly, you know, you play Quidditch, whatever.
Totally.
So you recently, we were just talking about it, we're in a very funny segment, What Does Karen Know?
Yeah.
Based on you and Seth being of different generations.
Yes. Yeah.
And having different points of reference.
One of our writers, Karen, just turned 24 years old. To give you an idea of how young that is, the year I graduated college, Karen was graduating from milk to solid foods. And As a result of having someone as young as Karen, we're finding out she has a much different frame of reference than a lot of us. So we thought we'd find out exactly what Karen knows about the past in a segment called What Does Karen Know? Thanks for being out here, Karen.
Oh, my God, I'm so excited.
All right, ready?
What do you think the room in general, if you were to pitch, like, how deep do you think the room could go on Harry Potter? Are they like, sure, oh, Harry Potter, wizard, or are they like, oh, we know Robert Pattinson was in Harry Potter? I don't know why that would be.
I actually
helpful.
Don't think they would know Robert Pattinson was in Harry Potter. I wonder.
Mistake.
I'm actually going to answer this, or I'm going to try this out on Thursday, but I bet the only other person who's obsessed or was obsessed was Ian. I imagine if I asked, like, Matt Goldridge, I feel like he'd be like, I'm a dad. Please, Karen.
You just turn around and go, I'm a... You'll be like, hey, Matt, do you? And he just goes, I'm a dad.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay.
Yeah, I can't imagine anyone else being super into it. Maybe Carnell, maybe Ben Warheit, I think, could low-key be very into Harry Potter.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So it's, like, very the sort of, like, pop culture cursory knowledge.
Yes.
Like, we know who Daniel Radcliffe is.
100%.
We know, oh yes, that, like, Alan Rickman was in those movies, and but beyond that.
Yeah, I think so.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Just to wrap things up,
mm-hmm.
can you share, if you have one controversial Potter opinion, theory, something that you feel, I would say, strongly about that might rile other Potter fans?
I feel a lot of sympathy for the Dursleys, specifically Petunia.
Wow.
I don't feel that much sympathy for Vernon Dursley. I think he's just a piece of shit. But I think, and I don't like Dudley. Okay, so I'm just talking about Petunia.
Petunia.
But I feel so bad for her because she clearly had a sister who was, I mean, especially in the movies, her sister's, like, gorgeous, and she's so ugly.
Yeah, really.
The actress is amazing, and they made her look bad. You know, like, it was just the stuff where they were like, okay, as a child, you had a sibling who was perfect, who was also a witch, had these magical powers, was the favorite child, and then you were not a witch. You asked to get into that school, and they were just like, no.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so you're like, great, I'm going to cut off that part of my life and try and be happy in what I have. She sadly marries an awful man and then gets this child who embodies everything she tried to avoid that made her childhood terrible.
Yeah.
Right. And then is having to take care of him. Obviously, I don't think she'd have been as mean to him, but I do feel like, oh, that I really like how J.K. Rowling wrote her character because I'm like, I get why you're so mean. Just I don't think she writes two-dimensional bad women. If that makes sense.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I think all the women who, even the ones who are very evil, I'm like, oh, I get it, though. I get sort of how that happened to you.
Yeah.
And you're like a person.
She's not just an evil stepmother. There's a whole lot of psychology behind why she is the way she is.
Totally.
Yeah.
And then the husband's just, no.
He's just a bad man.
Yeah.
He just sucks.
Yeah, which, honestly, those men exist.
Yeah, for sure. He's a type as well. Yeah, I think that's, I think the character in a lot of magic, the idea that there's always this one character who can't do it, who desperately wants to.
Yeah.
It's always kind of tragic. And I feel like, especially as an adult, I relate, this is very sad, but it's like you can relate more and more to the character who would love to have magic. This makes my life sound very sad, but it's not.
No,
you know what I mean?
I fully know what you mean.
But they've had to sort of like cope with the fact that like, well, I'm never going to have those skills.
Yeah.
There is something very like sad and adult about that.
Totally. I almost feel like, I mean, this is also going to make me sound sad. Right now I'm very happily single, I should say. But there are times, you know, when you feel very lonely romantically and it feels like the whole world is in a relationship with someone else that's wonderful. And you're like, wait, what's wrong with me? Like, why didn't I get to, you know, that I think is maybe a similar feeling.
Yes.
Yeah. And that sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It really sucks and it's really relatable. I would read a book about a Petunia Dursley character.
Oh, my God.
Like the sister who's just like, well, I'm not magic.
Yes.
So I'm going to get a degree and a job. Okay.
Yeah.
Like, great.
Yeah. Get really good at gardening.
Yes. Really good.
Yeah.
Karen, thanks so much. This was wonderful.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you for having me. This was so fun.
Yeah. And please send me the butterbeer recipe.
Yes, I absolutely will.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Bye.
And that is our episode. Thank you so much to Karen Chee for being here and talking with us and confessing all the deep, dark secrets that her soul harbors regarding Harry Potter and more, really. So you can see Karen at her show. She is co-hosting with Larry Owens on August 1st at the Bell House in Brooklyn, New York City. It's called Decolonize Your Mind. And if I know anything, I know that it will be very funny because Karen is very funny, Larry is very funny, and it'll be a wonderful show. So definitely check that out. Of course, watch Late Night with Seth Meyers on NBC at 12:30 a.m. because it's the morning every weeknight. And hey, if you like what you heard here on Boarding Party, go ahead, subscribe, download. You can subscribe wherever you get podcasts, iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, a fourth choice. Wherever you're getting podcasts, get this one, baby. More secrets next week. Bye.